The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast am I, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. We're open line through till 1 o'clock today. Open line tomorrow and then Friday, the constituency of Glenfaber and Peel in the spotlight when the two MHKs are on Man in Line. Tim Crookall, Kate Lord Brennan will be in on Friday. We'll talk about Peel and the West. And one thing that does affect Peel, of course, is the diminishing numbers of banks that there are in there. And interesting, I got a note sent in to me from Reg, who just says, you want to look to North Somerset in England. There's a town called Nailsea in North Somerset, which was left with only the local post office after the last bank closed its doors for good in February of this year. It was Lloyds Bank. There's a new hub offering a range of services with representatives from different banks rotating from day to day. It's a company, it's a hub called Cash Access UK, which runs the hubs, looking at potential sites in the town ahead of opening in a year's time. So they've tried to get everybody together. Apparently, the people visited the town earlier this year. Well, please confirm the banking hub offers face-to-face services in communities that have lost their high street bank branches. The hubs are owned by Cash Access UK. I think that's, don't they put in ATMs in places? So the hubs are owned by Cash Access UK and run by the post office in partnership with 9 major high street banks, including Lloyds. They can be used for paying in and withdrawing cash, paying bills, getting change for businesses. And apparently you can get face-to-face meetings with your bank for a more specific inquiry, though it depends on whether the representative from that bank is in that particular day. Well, it's obvious on the Isle of Man that the movement of the banking industry is away from personal banking. The banks have concluded that there's not that much money in personal banking and they want to do commercial banking, and the banks are gradually disappearing from the Isle of Man. Maybe that's something we could or should look at in the future. So much to consider, says Terry, with this assisted dying agenda. I certainly wouldn't want to put this into law. But Terry said there is a clear call for change, with places such as Jersey now doing this to suit the needs of the elderly and the poorly. We need assisted suicide. Nobody wants to linger in pain. I can't afford to keep paying nursing home for my old mum, says Terry. Perhaps she'd be better off. Well, the cost of nursing homes does nothing but go up. We are short of care homes on the Isle of Man. We've got one built and nobody to run it at the moment. Summerhill Views, Rhiannon Bay is past its sell-by date. Ramsay's Care Home past its sell-by date. One closed down in Peel. So where do we go from here? Medical science and the pharmaceutical industry are giving us all much, much greater lifespans than hitherto. Years and years ago, maybe 50 years ago, anybody who lived to be the age of 85 was very much the exception. Nowadays, people are routinely living into their late 90s. So it is a demographic time bomb that we're faced with, in that we do have an older population on our hands, which is to be celebrated. However, it does come at a harsh economic cost, and quite how we face that is down to politicians, and the politicians will be influenced by you.
Hi, listen to the current program on assisted dying. Everybody talks about all the problems that people who have terminal illness have. It should be up to a person who is in sound body and mind, doesn't have a physical terminal illness, but has got the disease of old age. Old age takes everything from you. When I get to the point I can't do the things I want to do, don't need to be, and have to be taken care of in bed, that should be my choice. As simple as that. I agree with the gentleman who was on previously. Thank you. Dorrance. Bye.
12 minutes past 12. Got a note in. Apparently, there's some problems in Strand Street in Douglas. Security says vandals have been climbing onto the roof and dropping tiles onto Strand Street. It's a story we're going to be watching at the moment, liaising with the police just to see what happens. Say no to assisted dying, says Sue, doesn't solve the problem. It just means the wishes of the vulnerable people dying in agony will be ignored. People bang on about being worried about the vulnerable being coerced into assisted dying while conveniently forgetting that those who are suffering are also vulnerable. The cost issue will balance out because the treatment and care needed to force somebody to stay alive for extra time will not be needed. And Sue said this is the same bunch who imagined women being dragged into clinics to be given abortions against their will. Does it happen? Of course not, because there are safeguards in place. The service is now part of healthcare, accessible if you need it, and if you don't, then it's none of your business and you won't even notice it. Well, the debate goes on. One part of the Isle of Man is facing a big struggle, and it's not a new struggle. It's the struggle faced by the farming industry on the island. And Dave Brew, a farmer who represents the Manx National Farmers Union, warns that history is a funny way of repeating itself if we don't learn the lessons of days gone by. Dave Brew refers to the plight seen in the 1930s on the Isle of Man, which ultimately led to significant legislative change. Dave Brew, farmer.
I just think that most sectors, not only on the island but probably throughout the UK, are pretty well in the doldrums, to be honest. Obviously, the last few years you've had very high inflation and obviously general living cost inflation as well, but I mean agricultural inflation was running up into the late 30% at its highest annually. I think food inflation was running something like in the teens, 16%, 17%, 18%. But if you then measured that on, if you like, product inflation ex farm, that inflation might have been down at 7% or 8%. So all you have to do is look at those figures and realise that basically in that period of time farms and farm income has been squeezed.
You were talking about an interesting piece that Harvey Briggs had posted, a wonderful journalist great to do with the Isle of Man farming.
It was an article that he wrote in 1994, and the headline of his article is Department's Plan to Turn Back the Clock Back to How It Was 60 Years Ago. And this is when I think the Marketing Acts were maybe started to be looked at by government. If I can maybe quote, 8 farmers with horses and carts trying to sell potatoes, vegetables and eggs in the same street in Douglas. Prime lambs taken all the way by train from Braddon to Ramsey and brought back again unsold, and milk delivered to dairies at less than it cost to produce it. Those were my vivid memories of life on a family farm in the early 1930s. Farmer's worst enemy was another farmer. They worshipped in the same churches on Sunday, practicing Christianity, but on Saturday they would stab each other in the back to earn enough to keep their families and workers for another week. Very strong words, but they were his vivid memories prior to organised marketing. And it was those dire situations in the early 1930s that led to the Marketing Acts, a form of unionisation of farmers, where instead of actually competing against each other and driving that down, a race to the bottom in effect, they actually collaborated with each other. And to a certain extent, I see the island, and not only the island, but probably a lot of the UK and Europe, in some ways back to where we were almost 100 years ago.
Dave Brew, from the Manx National Farmers Union, of course, a working farmer himself. If you're in the industry, you don't need me to tell you what's been going on with inflation. But if you're not in the industry, then farming is on the horns of a dilemma. It's in the jaws of a vice, with inflation for products absolutely racing away, particularly with things like fertiliser. And being faced nowadays, of course, Tesco has come to the Isle of Man. Tesco's buying isn't done on the Isle of Man. It's done from central headquarters. Tesco is very well known for being one of the world's biggest supermarkets, and you don't become one of the world's biggest supermarkets without absolutely screwing your suppliers down to the floor. That's how you make your margin. Now, quite how the Isle of Man fits into that, ShopRite was known for using a lot of Manx produce. Now, of course, Robinson's has filled part of that void. But what do we do? At some point, we have to make a decision. Remember, Ramsay Bakery has gone. Went years ago now. And we have that gap partially filled by small artisan bakeries, but nothing like the mass baking that used to be done in Ramsay in the middle of the night. So quite what we do, well, they will probably say it's down to you, the consumer. But the way times are at the moment, everybody wants the best price. We all want to pay as little as possible. So quite how that's going to work out, we'll find out. Certainly it's something we'll be talking about with farmers and politicians throughout the summertime. You got anything to say? By all means, do get in touch. And TJ on 476, we shouldn't discriminate because of cost. Assisted death should be available to everybody. So if you suffer, this came up because I think Dignitas, it's anywhere, I think, between 6,000 and 10,000 euros. And certainly Cliff mentioned yesterday that he'd registered with Dignitas and that new one, Pegasus. And thanks also to 068, just regarding banking and what we do on the Isle of Man. It's so important to have face-to-face banking. There's such a problem with fraud nowadays. It's important to know exactly who you're dealing with. Why are people talking about dying with dignity and old people in the same breath? They're completely different matters. Dying with dignity is for a very few terminally ill people. It's not for the elderly, says 725. Interesting, 725. What would you call elderly nowadays? What is old nowadays? I suppose it depends how old you are. If you're 16, 17, 18, old may be, what, 40? But if you're 40, what's old? 60. If you're 60, what's old? 80. And if you're 80, what's old? Perspective. What is an old person nowadays? What do you class as elderly nowadays? Hey, Julian's on. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
Very well today, thanks. I'm looking, just fingers crossed, for the weather anyway.
Yeah, I think it's due to get... It's definitely breaking through because it's feeling warmer out and about. On yesterday's show, you quite rightly asked me if I had any medical qualifications when we were talking about vitamin D. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, well, everybody says that. Whenever anybody comes on and gives advice, then it's always best to say, look, have you got a medical qualification? And then it's obvious you're not giving medical advice. It's a personal opinion.
Absolutely. And what I always do is I give the links and say, go look for yourself. So I'm not just telling people, just go and check it yourself. So there's an expression that comes to mind here, which is sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. We've been hearing on pretty much every news today that Dr. Allinson has said that the Isle of Man doesn't have a constitution as such. And this is going to be different from Canada. As far as I'm aware, Dr. Allinson only has an MA in medicine from King's College. And as far as I'm aware, he doesn't have a law degree or a constitutional law degree. If that is the case, then we need to know where his links are. Who exactly is telling Dr. Allinson this information? And if we don't have a constitution, that's still in the Tim Ward Library, Lord McDermott, the Chief Justice of Northern Ireland in the 50s, conducted the McDermott Report into the Isle of Man Constitution. And if anyone has a look at Laurie Hooper's bill to remove the bishop, that is called the Constitution Bill. So I'm a bit confused here, but it might be useful to know if we can have the name or names of the people that are informing Dr. Allinson if he doesn't have any kind of legal qualification, why he's saying this.
Did you meet the lady yesterday from Canada?
I didn't get to meet her, no. She was very busy and I didn't like to disturb. So, but of course, the people that we're not listening to is the doctor at the hospice. We're not listening to the top geriatrician on the island. We're not listening to Dr. Coelho, it seems. So I'm kind of intrigued as to why we're ploughing on with this without actually doing a bit of due diligence, really. And, you know, if somebody says we don't have a constitution and we're not like Canada, I would like to know who it is that is saying this, because Peter came on yesterday, who even teaches lawyers, and said that this is not the case. So he has several legal qualifications. So I will listen to the legal professor above a GP. No disrespect to Dr. Allinson, but if I'm being asked what my qualifications are, what is Dr. Allinson's qualification to say this, and who is telling him if not?
What about you? What do you think of the member for Aaron Michael, Mr. Cannon's view that this should be put as a referendum at the next general election at the side of the ballot paper?
Fair enough, but we need to have a proper open debate. Let's have 1,600 people in the Royal Hall at the Villa Marina in a question time thing, and let's have everything about this, because, you know, the idea that there are so many questions here being put forward by quite a few MHKs as well, and many, many people. This is not just a let's just do it and we'll work it all out later, like the calculation for costing, like the how is somebody's life even going to be ended? We don't even know that detail yet. So as that writer in the paper said about this forensic thought, let's have some forensic thought. Who is saying that we can't undo this later? Because as far as I'm aware, no country in the world can stop a future government from doing whatever it likes. I've never heard of this before, even in banana republics. You know, if a new government gets in, they do whatever they like. And the same thing has happened in history everywhere. So I'm just intrigued as to who it is that's saying that we can set this in stone and no future government that comes in 26 can undo anything. I'd love to know.
Okay, all right, we appreciate that. Julian, thanks for that.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Good to hear from you. A note in from Alice, who just said, yes, the farmers on the Isle of Man need to be protected. Otherwise, what will happen is if their finances, if their, the business model doesn't work, they will simply wait for farm buildings to be reclassified and then sell them off with planning permission. Ah, the old way, eh? Well, quite what we do. And remember, at the side of all this, the farmers, the agricultural industry, aren't just in business. They are. They get paid to be custodians of the countryside on the Isle of Man. I think we're all of one mind. The countryside on the Isle of Man is one of the things that makes the Isle of Man a glittering jewel in the Irish Sea. If the countryside weren't as it is, the place would look worse. And if the farmers are looking after the countryside, well, something has to happen. At the moment, nature is performing its magical miracles throughout the summertime, and harvest will be with us in a few months' time. But we do produce food, and we do need food. And nowadays, with a sustainable living being the aim, surely we need to keep our food miles as little as possible. However, if the food that we produce is being outpriced or underpriced by food coming halfway around the world, how do we keep those people in business? Because either we do want sustainable food or we don't. Or we either do want the cheapest food possible or we don't. We have to navigate our way through this. And a message in from lots of messages coming in for Kate Lord Brennan and for Tim Crookall on Friday. Remember, it is constituency stuff for Peel and Glen Faber. I went to the fun fair last week, says Mike. Overpriced rubbish. I watched a man who looked incapable, who was in charge of a store, took no notice of people leaning over and putting the rings over the prices. One guy walked away with an armful of stuff that he really didn't win. Oh, well, just have a good time at the fun fair. I have to have my prostate removed next month, says Bob. I've got aggressive prostate cancer. I was advised by Clatterbridge Hospital to have the COVID autumn booster, but Manx Care's refused to give it to me, saying it's a waste of money. Is that right? We all know that the Isle of Man government and Manx Care doesn't waste money, so I offered to pay for it just to be told no again. So it's either to boots in Liverpool or I hope I don't catch COVID when recovering from it. Electricity meters, says Tom, have to be read every 2 years, I was informed by the company. This is the point that if you refuse a smart meter, you have to pay for the meter reader to come and how often it is. Well, we've heard every answer from every quarter to every 6 months to every year, and now every 2 years, says Tom. And Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
I can't wait to tell Andy Conan that story about the fun fair. I'm sure he'll be made up that all the stock getting clicking away. The Maasai tribe that Julian was talking about yesterday, is that the one in deepest, darkest Derby? The Maasai tribe. It was. I'm listening. I'm just trying to link a few things together, Andy. And we were talking about. D3 the other day, and yesterday was been talked about a few times, and I had friends come back from Spain the other day as well, and they've got COVID, so these all-inclusive holidays that they're doing to Spain are very inclusive, aren't they? You come back with the COVID as well.
Well, apparently now I've found that we're trying to find the cheapest place now for a COVID test. It's £2 at the moment. If anybody know any advance on £2, we'll be happy to know.
Do you think the government are flirting with us on this one?
Possibly, yes. It is. It is quite the most ridiculous name for a COVID variant, isn't it? The flirt.
I do wonder sometimes, are they actually just putting so much idiotic stuff out there just to see what our breaking point is? It is idiotic, isn't it? But talking about D3, and again, let me state, I am not a medical practitioner. I take 10,000 IU of D3 and have done right the way through since this whole COVID thing kicked off. You can't overdose on D3. It can't do you any harm. It's just, I've always found it interesting. I think I said this right at the very start of this whole COVID thing, why this government never, ever explored the benefits of D3 or promoted the benefits of D3 to anyone. They said, go home and drink water if you have COVID. There was no promotion of D3 ever, which I always found bizarre and still find bizarre that they don't. And like Julian said, you know, we're living in this part of the world where we are probably D3 deficient, and because the NHS don't test for that, people don't realise that we're deficient in it. Now, the other thing I want to link to that is going on to the story that I've asked on here, and I've asked Al Cannon, and now, of course, this governmentmetoffice.uk report that came out the other week on YouTube about deflecting the rays of the sun. Which they've now admitted to, putting a film over the sky and deflecting the rays of the sun. So again, linking back to D3, we are going to be more deficient of D3 because we're not getting direct sunlight.
Mention that again. What do you mean, deflecting the rays of the sun? What's that about?
Oh, I'll send you the link to this, Andy. This was brought out, and this conversation has been gone on before. I know we've spoke about it, and I'm sure Bonsai will be on in a bit saying I'm a conspiracy theorist. But this is an actual interview that was given from the metoffice.co.uk with reference to engineering and cloud engineering and putting films of substances in the sky to deflect the rays of the sun for whatever reason. They think they're God in doing this. So this is now kind of starting to come out now as an established piece of information rather than conspiratorial, because conspiracy theories only last about 6 months at the moment anyway. So we're going to be even more D3 deficient. And also following on from that, if we're linking to farming, we're not getting the direct sunlight to the farmland. Is that going to have even more consequences for farming in the future? So that all-in-one is, again, we've had these talk about farming and talk about the future of farming, and we see in the Netherlands and all these places the pressure that's being put on farmers. This whole thing we're talking about farming has gone on and on. It's all the way through Europe, through Ireland. And like you said there before, Andy, sustainability. We're talking about this word of sustainability. Surely our sustainability here is looking after our farming and promoting farming and the agriculture and meat on the island. If that goes, where's our sustainability? The sustainability is Tesco and the Manxman.
Well, at some point, somebody's got to make a decision, because the Isle of Man used to grow tens of thousands of tons of spuds. It supplied the entire summer season here. And we don't do that because we buy cheap spuds from elsewhere. So really, yeah. You know, if you're going to have potato, and I love potatoes, one of my favourite vegetables, but it's a political point in that you can eat spuds on the Isle of Man that have come all of 5 miles from away. So why would you be buying stuff that's coming halfway around the world if we're going to live sustainably? It may be, you know, it's not a facile, it's not a facetious point. It's quite serious.
And it is, and that's why I keep chirping on about it. And of course, the quality as well of our food. We know the footprint of the food. We know where it comes from in the meat. We've got good producers here. We're buying stuff now which is getting more and more not healthier as we're buying it because of where it's coming from. So, you know, I wonder where this is heading. And again, we're back to what feet the governments have got on this. You know, how much input they've got in saving the farmland and the agricultural society. And that's the big question. Now, you've got Claire Barber coming on, I think, on, is it the 24th?
Yeah, she will be in later on, yeah.
Yeah, now, I mean, this is a question I've asked this before of Claire Barber about how much interest has government got in supporting farming, not farmers. There's a difference here. Not supporting farmers per se, but supporting farmers who farm. There's a difference in what I'm saying here, I think. And I she deflects from the answer, and it's all about this going down this carbon route and net zero route, which is going to absolutely decimate our farming here. It's going to decimate also our finance. It's going to be very expensive. As Bonzo keeps saying, it's going to be painful.
Okay.
So where are we heading with this, Andy? And the other thing I just wanted to tag on before I go, Rebecca Meir came on to deflect some stuff that was said by the butcher the other day, Mr. Mayers. And I think from that there, what she said yesterday in your interview, that what's come back from what I can see is the fact that the meat truck never ever went on the access road anyway because it couldn't get under the bridge. So her answer really is a little bit flawed in what's happened in years previous. And why this is happening now still, because this was never a problem before. But the meat truck doesn't go under there because it's too heavy and it doesn't go under the bridge anyway.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Leave that with Head of News. See what you can find out.
All right, thanks for calling. It's 25 to 1 on Manx Radio. This coming Saturday, there are two political surgeries, Arbury Castle Town and Maloo. You can meet Jason Morehouse and Tim Glover. They're at the Abbey Church Hall in Bridge Road, Ballasalla, from 10 to 11:30 this Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, Douglas North, David Ashford and John Wannenberg are at the main assembly hall at Williston School in School Road from 11:30 till 1 p.m.
Your mission, Sunday 16th June, rendezvous at the Villa Marina Gardens from 1300 to 1700 hours. Salute our armed services and have a great time with the family. It's Armed Forces Day 2024, the chance to say thank you to our service personnel and families past and present, with fairground rides, veterans charity stalls, military stands and more, followed by free afternoon tea for all those currently serving, veterans and families. Entries free. Show your support.
Do you know, Dave, the Q-Plus counter always has just what I need. Whatever plumbing job I'm working on, whether a state-of-the-art bathroom or the latest heating system, Q-Plus always help. With extensive supplies, friendly, knowledgeable service and great prices, it really is the one-stop shop for trade and DIY customers alike. And if they don't have what you want in stock, they'll find it for you. See for yourself. Just take a look at Q-Plus on Facebook.
The extended Ramsey Garden Centre is deceptively large. You'll find a warm welcome and everything from bedding and perennials, fruit and vegetables, to lighting, garden ornaments, bird baths, bird tables and indoor and outdoor pots. Come and browse at Ramsey Garden Centre.
This year's Stage Ed West End Summer School is going to be even more magical, because as well as the chance to work with musical theatre pros and perform in front of family and friends, you could also land a part in Dick Whittington, this year's Christmas pantomime at the Villa Gaiety, supported by Zedra Isle of Man. The Stage Ed Summer School, back at Ballacameen High School Studio Theatre, 22nd to 27th July and 29th July to 3rd August, for all ages from 6 to 18. Visit stage-edholidayschools.com for details and booking. The Stage Ed Summer School with Zedra Isle of Man and your nation station, Manx Radio.
Well, everyone agrees this year's TT coverage has been better than ever. But if you want other TT stories, the archive room is where you need to be. We've got excellent communications.
And he was feeding pennies into the slot to keep us going from those particular phone boxes.
Occasional wardrobe malfunctions.
They're absolutely dreadful things, sweltering hot in the summer and freezing cold when you get any water on them at all.
And fixes for any kind of problem.
I grabbed some sods off the hedge, threw them in and the fire went out.
The TT, but not necessarily as you know it. From the archive room this Thursday evening, just after 6 o'clock, here on Manx Radio. Or pick up the podcast with extra content in it, available straight after broadcast.
I don't suppose you'd allow it now.
Whoa, hang on, we can't give too much away.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
22 minutes before one, Liz dropped a note in to say Dr. Henrietta Ewart, do you remember her, told us COVID wouldn't go away, it would become endemic like chickenpox. So it's just going to keep popping up. And there is actually, this is not a Mickey take, but the variant is called Flirt. Flirt, F-L-I-R-T. It's called Flirt. I've just taken a walk around Nobles Park. What a mess. The damage caused to the playing fields is appalling. So who's going to pay to fix that, says that correspondent. And regarding the Sister Dying Act, says Ian, it surely can be written in a way so that those with a terminal condition can avail themselves of the service without the case quoted by Julian leading to a handout of life termination for all. Surely safeguards can be written into the legislation so people who are terminally ill can avail themselves of it and put an end to their suffering, says Ian. Oh, Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Oh, hello. Yes, Julian and Juan, conspiracy chorus boys. Where would we be without them, eh? I mean, I didn't realise I was a small, cultured Far Eastern tree, for example.
I'd take it as a compliment, Bonzo.
I'll take it as a compliment, which will doubtless frustrate Juan greatly. Right, coming to some of their points, and just referring to the person who was messaging about assisted dying, and then Julian's comments on assisted dying, and Dr. Anderson's observations on it. Well, the thing is, yes, to the person who has just written in, yes, that's the situation that you would like to be able to do. But the thing is to make law that works like that, that allows assisted dying in very restricted, controlled circumstances, and provides the safeguards against any abuse of that facility. Doing that in legislation is blooming hard. Which is why people tend not to try to do it. And I think there is the point that there has been, I think, some assumption that it can be a bit simplified and then we can do various other bits in regulations later. You know, rather uneasy about that. And, you know, in my previous experience of putting complex things through legislatures, it's, you know, I don't see how it can work in ensuring the safeguards that it should do in its present form. I think it's going to have to go back and be redrafted, and it's going to be a bigger bill when that happens, as in a larger sized piece of much larger piece of legislation when that happens. As to Julian's observations on Dr. Allenson's ability to talk about things of constitutional law, well, I'm a philosopher by training, academic training, but you know, that didn't stop me from learning how to actually help write laws and help put them through the legislature and then implement those laws and indeed perform regulation under those laws. So it's not necessary that you be a constitutional lawyer for much of these things. Indeed, of course, King Charles, to my knowledge, is not a constitutional lawyer, and yet he signs royal assent on all bills. So, there you go.
Bonto, how are we going to find our way through this assisted dying legislation? It's patently obvious it divides opinion and causes argument in some cases as well. So, I mean, where do we go? Is it something that can you be reductive in this, or is it just interminably nuanced? And we, you know, in the end, it's a personal decision.
Well, trying to legislate for it, let's leave all the moral ideas and objections on that. Let's, you know, yes, it is a thing that obviously generates extremely strong feelings. Now, let's just leave those out of the way for a bit and just do the practical of, can we actually do it so that the facility of assisted dying can be offered safely whilst there are all the safeguards that we would want to see to stop that being abused or somehow having scope creep and becoming much more widely available for other circumstances. So it's the practical bit which I concentrate on, which I hope our legislature is concentrating on. And the thing is, as I say, it's blooming complicated. It's an absolute spider's web.
And do you think it's... you can make a sweeping generalisation, but do you think most people can take the moral and religious aspects out of this case?
Well, there's the problem. And that then goes to the politicians, who then, of course, are facing their own sort of dilemma of, how far is my decision-making on this going to be moral, ethical, and representing the will of my constituents, for example, rather than understanding what is the best thing to do. And it can get muddled.
Do you agree
I appreciate that problem greatly.
Do you agree with the member for Aaron Michael's suggestion this should go as a referendum alongside the general election in 2026?
I am not a great lover of referenda. Well, there's one argument, of course, against referenda, and it's called Brexit. But the thing is, I think there is an argument to be made for doing that, yes.
Okay. Appreciate it, Bonto. Thanks for calling.
Okay, then, cheers. Bye.
And Andrew's on with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good day to you. I wanted to speak about the person who suffered that disastrous house fire in Port Erin.
Oh, yeah.
Just before I did that, I just wanted to touch on the assisted dying, if I may, please, which was, let's see if I can just bring it up here. Oh, I shut that down whilst I was waiting. There was some comment from Mr. Hooper this morning on X, and I wondered if you'd seen that.
Which particular bit? Which one did he say?
Apparently, I haven't got it. I've lost it now, but there was... on your website, very early this morning, there was a comment and a headline about the Canadian doctor.
Oh, that was it. Yes, I think Mr. Hooper took exception to it and said she hadn't given evidence.
And apparently, according to him, you guys have changed the headline, but not told anybody that this has changed.
Now, I think I don't know, but all I know is that the lady in question didn't give formal evidence, but she did speak to the politicians. So I think it's a kind of definition of what evidence is.
Yeah, he seems to be saying that you guys have just changed it after effectively correcting it, but not say you've corrected it. So who knows what's correct now?
Well, I mean, I think the question, the situation was that the lady in question did speak and she gave, how can I put it, evidence with a small e to the politician. She wasn't called to the committee to give evidence. So there we are. That's what happened.
I'm accepting that, but it appears that you guys have changed the storyline, but not acknowledged that you've changed the storyline. So anyway, I'll leave it that.
I'll pass your comment on to the news editor.
Cheers. And the other thing that caught my eye, please, the tomorrow with representatives from Peel, Mr. Krugall and Ms. August Hansen.
Lord Brennan.
When was that organised? Can you recall? Who initiated that?
I did it. What I did was halfway through the administration, we've been through every constituency and both MHKs have pitched up and this is the final one.
Because out and about last night, I just realised in a shop window in Peel, they actually have a constituency meeting on Saturday, which seemed coincidental. Anyway, the purpose of the call, the house fire in Port Erin.
Yeah.
On your site, it's talking about the house fire and the lady, and where's it gone? The house fire. Port Erin woman overwhelmed by public support after house fire. Okay. And yes, you've got a picture of the house, which are my sympathy for this lady, that she's lost absolutely everything. But I think people might not realise, if they don't actually live in Port Erin, and she puts on her on her Facebook page, my home of 25 years, yeah, but actually it's a commissioner's house. So it's the commissioners who'll be responsible for rehousing her into one of their other properties. And she's saying she didn't have any insurance because effectively it was too expensive or she didn't have the money to pay for the insurance.
Interesting point of view. I just wonder whether that's a condition of tenancy in the public sector that you have to have fire insurance?
Well, exactly. So, you know, she's now relying on public support, which is okay, but she hasn't, if she's not paid for contents insurance, that's all it would be. It's not actually buildings insurance, because that would be the commissioner's. It's just contents insurance.
Right.
So we're not talking massive amounts of money. And she says, I didn't have the money. So, basically, this is what happens. So, for the sake of you not paying, say, 200 quid a year for your contents, all your beloved belongings, then, you know, you're not going to be, you know, now you've got nothing. And you're not going to get any compensation. You're just relying on effectively crowdfunding. And now she says, send money direct to me to my PayPal account. Well, people outside of Port Erin are not going to realise this is a person living in a commissioner's house. And it just, it's a very thin story that's there. And I think maybe perhaps some follow-up should be done that encourages people in commissioners' houses and in Douglas Council houses, etc., or whatever you want to call them, social houses or whatever the terminology is, the woke terminology, that they should have contents insurance. And surely they should have to evidence this to the relevant authority once a year. Yes, I do have contents insurance.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that, Andrew. Thanks for calling today.
Cheers, Dave.
Good to hear from you. Tony B is with us now. Hello.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
Very well, thanks, yeah, Tony.
You've had a busy morning. You've been talking for about 40 minutes on this programme about assisted dying. And Bonzo, I don't particularly agree with half of what he says because it's what his opinion is, but he's correct. We don't have the wherewithal, the understanding, the legal aspect within government. And Peter is very clear. You know, this is not assisted dying. It's basically assisted murder with agreement. So the word assisted dying is suicide. So we need to call it what it is. And we're not in a position to have a discussion about that or even put a law in place. What happens when the UK decides, OK, we're going to do this now, we'll get it all sorted and we'll get royal assent. And by the way, the King signed stuff because Parliament's approved it, not because he wants it or not. And he doesn't have to be an expert because that's what you have in Parliament. So Bonzo's got a little bit of a question mark on his understanding of the law within the UK. I'm surprised. But the King signs it. That's great. He doesn't have to have understanding because that's how it's set up. But the whole thing is going round in circles. We're wasting huge amounts of time looking at this and saying, oh, well, how can we do it this way? How can we do it that way? Why are we doing that? Because at the end of the day, we need to follow whatever is said in the UK. We can't have our own laws and be different from the UK when they bring a law in. So what are you going to do then? So we're putting the cart before the horse here. We should say, OK, assisted dying. Who agrees with this? Who doesn't agree with it as a law? That's the first thing, and that should be a referendum. The same as the bishop should be a referendum. Not something that Laurie Hooper thinks is a good idea, because it's Liberal Vanning's idea. And it's not democratic at all. He's brought this in, just like Dr. Anson has brought in a law, or tried to bring a law in, that says, I want assisted dying. Well, why is he doing that? Why isn't he looking after the economy? Why isn't he looking after farmers? Why isn't he looking at what he should be doing? And the same goes for Laurie Hooper. I'm still waiting for my shingles injection, which is working its way through the system.
I mean, how long have you been waiting for the shingles injection?
About 4 months now, 5 months. And Laurie Hooper always going through the system. Now we hear, yes, it's gone through the system, but we're still messing around with it. We're deciding what to do. And we haven't sent one appointment out, as far as I know.
All right.
So he just goes on and on and on. Laurie Hooper needs to do his job and stop messing with the Constitution or issues that he thinks are a constitutional issue and allow the people of the Isle of Man to make that decision.
Okay. All right.
So there should be two little things on the side of this year's papers, whatever, or next year's papers, that says, do you agree with assisted dying? Do you agree with Laurie Hooper?
Okay, all right. Thank you, Tony. We've got to go. We're out of time. Thanks to Howie Kane on the phones today. Back tomorrow at high noon.
W-I-N-T.
60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
Kelly's Eye, brought to you by Ellis Brown Architects.
Peter, what's Kelly's Eye looking at today?
Today, David, musical. Well, almost musical. A post horn. Two post horns.
One, two, three, four. Three legs there in the glass, and then there's another lot up there. 15 legs makes five, three legs of man. The post horn is part of the three legs insignia as well, though.
It is. It's, of course, the insignia of the what used to be the Isle of Man Post Office or whatever, and is now just called Isle of Man Post. And here we are up on the cool estate, and we're looking at the sorting office. It's an industrial building by virtue of its construction, steel frame and partly clad in plastic coated, I would say, metal profile. bit of shaping to it and brickwork therefore in behind. The sorting office, I gather, was complete about 1994. It was designed by Kellerton Robinson, a practice that no longer exists. And of course, before Circular Road, the sorting office was down behind the Regent Street post office.
Yeah. It's got a bit of children's television about it in appearance. It looks, it's kind of juvenile, and yet it looks immensely practical for what it is.
Well, in terms of usage, I mean, I don't know what the postmen think, but I'm sure it's an awful lot better than what they had in Circular Road, because they were on two floors there, and they were working in a building that was built to be a factory and never to be a sorting office. It's a functional building. There's an awful lot of people come driving up here at night to pick up the parcels that were delivered or weren't delivered when they were out. It seems to work in that sense. It's a lot better than queuing on the steps at Circular Road, going up inside, waiting for the smallest of hatches for somebody to then go off and find your post.
That's right.
So, yeah, it works, and no doubt at some point someone will say it's too small.
Many of the most iconic buildings around the island have been designed by Ellis Brown Architects. Keep up with Ellis Brown today on Facebook or via ellisbrown.im.
Part of Island Life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.